Welcome to Three in the Key.
Kobe Bryant, a guy that would push me and help me win three titles in a row. It also helped me get pushed off the team and traded to Miami.
Bringing you in-depth basketball analysis and interviews from the great white north.
When I heard that I would be the first speaker in tonight, I think maybe somebody made a mistake. Don't laugh, because I think maybe... Because I think this spot belongs to great Allen Iverson. You know why? Because I need more practice than him.
With your hosts, Elias L. Zane, Will Macklin, and Dave the Professor Tripp.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Three in the Key. Elias L. Zane alongside Dave Tripp.
How are you?
Will Macklin again.
Hall of Fame week.
Hall of Fame week, indeed. Another packed episode for all you guys out there. The 2016 class for the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame happened this week. They've been inducted. We'll talk about that. We'll go through the list of players, coaches, one contributor, and a referee also got inducted into this year's class. We will talk Sixers, their young and upcoming roster. We mentioned them a lot in the past couple of episodes. Because they're a team that we're looking forward to watching.
Yeah, I think one of the teams everybody's looking forward to seeing. Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid coming back.
Yeah, what are they going to do with Okafor and Noel? They got other young pieces, Saric coming over from Europe. Also, all your news from around the NBA will get you up to date on the latest as we approach training camp in a couple of weeks for the National Basketball Association. Remember, you can get a hold of us by email at the3inthekey@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at 3 in the Key. Follow on Twitter at BasketPod, on Instagram at The3 in the Key. And you can listen to each and every episode on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher Radio. Make sure to rate and review us on iTunes.
Wherever
and you can check out our website, 3inthekey.ca. So we are everywhere. Today's program, as we quickly mentioned, we discussed the 2016 Hall of Fame class. And we talk Sixers with Jake Pavorsky of Liberty Ballers to discuss this upcoming season for Philadelphia, a young team with lots of talent.
No doubt.
And assets, of course. News around the NBA real quick. We'll get into more detail a little later. Shumpert arrested on a DUI, I believe. Is that
it? Yeah, he's had a busy week, eh?
Yeah. Lance Stephenson joins the Pelicans. Yeah, that could be a good
I think
pickup.
That's a pretty good move, actually.
I don't know. You like it? I don't really have too much of an opinion on it so far.
I will dig into that later.
Yeah, Josh Richardson, also of the Heat. He's hurt, so we'll get you more info on that. But we start with the 2016 Hall of Fame class.
How about those speeches?
Oh, man, amazing.
Some dynamite speeches for this Hall of Fame class.
AI has to be up there. I think he was. Shaq was funny.
Yeah.
Yao had a joke as well.
You know, I like them coming in with jokes. And then, you know, getting serious, talking about their careers. It's good stuff.
The Hall of Fame consists of players, coaches, contributors, referees, and teams. This year's class, the Naismith Memorial Basketball Hall of Fame class of 2016, included players, coaches, one contributor, and a referee. The players who got inducted are Shaq, Shaquille O'Neal, Allen Iverson, Yao Ming, Cumberland Posey, Zelmo Beatty, and Cheryl Swoops. The coaches are Tom Izzo and John McClendon. A contributor is Jerry Reinsdorf, and the referee is Daryl Gerritsen.
Gerritsen.
So a contributor is someone who made significant contributions to the game of basketball. That's how you get inducted in. Jerry Reinsdorf, the chairman of an owner of the Chicago Bulls since 1985.
He's had some good years there.
I think so.
Yeah, not too bad.
Turning the franchise into a lucrative business that won six NBA championships. We all know in the Jordan era in the 90s, in the early 90s, and then again in the late 90s from 91 to 93 and then 96 to 98. I think he also owns the White Sox and they won a World Series a couple of years ago, right?
Tough gig.
I know, huh?
Yeah.
Referee, Daryl, he officiated for 27 years from 67 to 94 and then served as the NBA supervisor of officials for 17 years. And he headed the first union of NBA refs, so he's now inducted to the Hall as well. Coaches, you're one coach from the NCAA, Tom Izzo, who's still coaching.
No question. The guy's a legend. I don't know if there's a more respected coach in all of NCAA basketball. That includes, like, lots of legends. I mean, Larry Brown's still in there, or at least he just got out. You've got
Krzyzewski.
Mike Krzyzewski. There's a ton of guys. Bill and I Self. Still think that most people, most players, are most excited to run into Tom Izzo. You look at some of the players that have come through, and if you ever played for Izzo, you play for Izzo for the rest of your life. You look at Draymond Green. That guy wears Michigan green more than Michigan State green than anybody. And
yeah, Magic Johnson was special. There although before Tom Izzo. But
hey, absolutely. They're still
about,
tight. There's no question.
Speaks about the school itself, yeah, and the program and the history. Program. Over 500 college career wins. He has that title, obviously, in 2000. Seven NCAA Final Fours, College Coach of the Year in 98. And he's made those Final Fours with sometimes with teams you think, oh, wow, how did he pull that off?
He actually got his highest recruiting class ever this year. So all those teams that made the Final Four, he's never been a top 10 recruiting class ever until this year. It's pretty remarkable that he develops those classes himself.
Yeah, amazing. And
you look at a guy like Draymond Green. I mean, he's a perfect example. But this guy was like a three-star prospect that they developed over 4 years, and now he's arguably the best defensive player in the NBA. So
up there with Kawhi Leonard,
yeah,
obviously.
A lot of that goes to Tom Izzo.
Yeah, he developed him or helped him develop his talents. A guy that got drafted in the second round in the NBA. Remember that.
Yeah, that was a pretty good year for Golden State.
Yeah, won a title and then signed his big contract, his long-term 5-year, $80-plus million deal with the Warriors.
Worth every penny.
For sure. And it's going to be exciting. Obviously, we mentioned this a lot to see how they're going to play this year with the addition of Kevin Durant. Another coach that was inducted, John McLennan, who has over 400 college career wins, a 3-time NAIA Coach of the Year Award, 3-time champion in the NAIA with Tennessee State A&I University, 8-time CIAA championships in the 40s and early 50s with North Carolina College for Negroes. So he's inducted to the Hall of Fame
for a second
time. For a second time, that's right. First time as a contributor in 1979. There's a couple of players. Also, two times, you have the people that were on that Dream Team that were inducted as the Dream Team. And most of them, if not, I'm pretty sure all of them, except for Christian Laettner, are in the Hall of Fame.
I think that you're correct on that.
Yeah, all of them. So that is crazy. You can get inducted more than once, obviously. Moving on to the players who usually take most of the Hall of Fame and the inductees. Cheryl Swoopes, the first player to be signed to the WNBA. What a legend woman she is, and obviously setting the tone for women's basketball around the globe. 3-time WNBA MVP, 4-time champion, 3-time Olympic gold medalist, obviously with Team USA. She's
a special player.
Yeah.
She's the role model for a lot of girls playing basketball right now. And really, really blazed a trail in the WNBA and with women's basketball and proved that she's one of the best of all time.
Correct. Zelmo Beattie, one of the players that played way back when before we were alive, 2-time NBA All-Star, won in the ABA. He's on the ABA All-Time Team, an All-Star 3 times there.
Great name, Zelmo.
Yeah, you know what I mean? NBA All-Rookie First Team. Cumberland Posey, who's known as the best basketball player from 1900 to the 1920s, who's actually a baseball player as well and is in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular to make both Hall of Fames, like the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown and also the NBA Hall of Fame, is quite the accomplishment, especially for a guy whose name is Cum.
That's
what
right.
They called him. They called him Cum for years and years.
Cumberland Posey formed, operated, and played for the Lowndes Big Five, which became the most dominant basketball team of the Black Fives era through the mid-1920s, winning 4 straight colored basketball world championship titles. I mean, it's obviously way before our time, and there's no video, but these guys, people know of them, and they're deserving to be in this Hall of Fame for what they did, especially in a time like that where there was still obviously racism.
For sure.
And being known as the best basketball player when it wasn't really your sport when you were playing baseball is quite an accomplishment. Now moving on to the players who we've seen play, and we've watched.
All three of these guys are kind of hard to miss.
Yeah, legends of the game. Two of them just because they're over 7 foot and it's hard to miss. The other one is shorter
almost
than 6 feet.
Almost 8 feet in one case,
and one of them is shorter than 6 feet. But
maybe the best small player ever.
probably the best small player ever. I don't think there's a question about it. Guy that poured his heart out every time he stepped on the court. Iverson was a guy who I loved watching because he would go on there and want to kill you on the court, pour it all out, play with passion. Was misunderstood for most of us, his career, I would say. He obviously got in trouble, we could say, on and off the court with... He was a guy...
He started off with a bad rap because, you know, he got in some trouble in high school. And yeah. Whether he was innocent or not, I'm in the camp that I think that he kind of got railroaded on that. And it really derailed his future. Was given a second chance in Georgetown.
That's right.
Under John Thompson, who he had a lot of love for in his speech.
Exactly.
And he should, because that... To be able to turn
saved,
that around.
He said he saved his life.
Absolutely.
He straight up saved his life.
It's
John
true.
Thompson saved his life. He went first of all in that 1996 draft. He was the NBA MVP in 2001 and 11-time All-Star from 2000 to 2010.
Consecutive.
First team,
yeah, all of them, yeah.
11 times. He was a first-teamer three times, which I think is not fair. I think he should have been on the NBA first team more
but
than that.
But it's a testament of how deep the league was.
Exactly, at that time.
And who he was playing
guy,
against. Yeah.
For sure.
And on
rookie
a team
of
that
year.
Wasn't dominating every year either, right? Like...
Yeah, and
Philly
he brought that
lean
team.
Years.
He brought that team to the finals with
right.
no real star alongside him. They traded for Mutombo that year.
But he was
they
like
had Tony
34 Kukoc. Or 36.
Yeah, he like, was old. He was old. Even though he won the Defensive Player of the Year that year, and Mutombo, who
but it's
was
not like they were getting
to
them
the Hall of Fame
together.
Last year.
Yeah.
Exactly. But Tony Kukoc was there. They had some solid role players. Aaron McKee, I think Eric Snow was on that squad as well. But it was AI. It was AI who was the MVP that year. It was AI who brought that team to the finals and took one from the Lakers. They're the only team that season to beat the Lakers in the playoffs. The Lakers till this day stand as the best postseason team with 15-1 winning that title. And if it wasn't for AI, they would have went undefeated.
You can make the argument that the Bulls did pretty well too. Six championships.
But I'm talking just that
the
championship team,
yeah.
that season.
That's one of the best of all time. There's no question.
Yeah, four-time scoring champion, also Allen Iverson.
That's Allen Iverson willing his way to victory in a game that he has no business in winning.
Yeah,
he's
48
the individual
points.
Talent was on another level.
Stepping over Tyronn Lue.
And he's an icon, like crossing over Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
I mean, the guy is an icon, a cultural icon, a fashion icon. They had to rewrite the entire... rule book on what you could wear to a game because of AI. Because everybody wanted to look like him. Everybody wanted the cornrows. Like everybody.
The chains, the baggy clothes,
first pair of
the
Reeboks,
do-rags.
First pair of Reeboks I ever bought were Allen Iverson. So, like, the guy was a trendsetter. There's no question. And
100%.
People are still catching up.
I think he is the biggest trendsetter in the NBA ever.
I would agree. The only thing is I don't think if Reebok and Jordans were side by side right now, I would agree.
Obviously, Jordan takes that. But I mean, in terms of
for him, it was
the changing.
Though, yeah,
the changing of the culture of the league. Everyone came in. It's almost like they labeled him as a thug or a gangster that played basketball. You know what I mean? They changed.
But
the clothing,
like I said,
you weren't allowed to do this and that.
They treated him like a prison inmate for something that he may have not even done. So I feel like that's part of the reason that people liked AI so much, the chip on his shoulder, but also because of his incredible skills and the fact that he was his own guy.
Yeah, and he was being himself. He was his own guy. He was being himself. And the league looked at it and David Stern looked at it like he was different. And that's why I believe... the change was made. Now everyone comes into games dressed in a suit or, you know, nice clothes, except for maybe Russell Westbrook, who knows.
Looks like a
what
Mountie
he wears.
Or whatever he looks like. I don't know.
Yeah. Moving on. Yao Ming, who's obviously the biggest name coming out of Asia.
Another trailblazer.
Yeah. To join the NBA. An 8-time All-Star, 2-time All-NBA second team, 3-time third team, All-Rookie first team. A guy whose legacy lives on till in China to this day, and basketball is huge in China because of Yao Ming and what he did. Obviously, a shorter career because, you know, when you're that tall and you start getting injured, foot problems, he couldn't really overcome them.
You see that with
but
a
he
lot
was
of...
solid in Houston, man. Like all those years
with T-Mac. And
yeah,
he had
T-Mac.
Really
unfortunately, they didn't really pass the first round. I believe I know T-Mac never got out of the first round until he signed with San Antonio, where he didn't play much, but they made it to the finals. But Yao Ming, a guy who was basically like 19-9, 19-10 a night, a few blocks.
Yeah.
He was out there and he was solid, could shoot it, was a good free throw shooter, could shoot it from 15, 17, 18 feet. He was definitely a solid guy. He had some good battles with Shaquille O'Neal, who we're moving on to here, the other player that was inducted to the Hall of Fame, and I think the most decorated out of all of them.
Yeah.
Four-time NBA champion.
Special
three-time
player for you, too.
Yeah, played for the Lakers, obviously, all those great years with Kobe Bryant, three-time finals MVP, NBA MVP in 2000.
That blows my
All-Star.
Mind that he only won one MVP. The most dominant player for Ever. His entire generation. For the entire time he was in the league, right up until Miami at the end of his career where he started to
yeah,
drop a couple
Miami
levels. Right up until that championship year, he was the most dominant player in the NBA. And he won one most valuable player. Why? Because he played on a team with a player that was nearly or just as good as him in Kobe Bryant. Like, I don't understand. Your team lights up the entire NBA. Why can't you have two MBAs? Why can't you have two MVPs on that team?
Yeah.
It's crazy to me.
It is. The most dominant player ever, obviously. And Shaq said a couple of days ago that he only showcased 30% of what he could have really done on the court, because he's like, the double teams and the triple teams were coming so fast that he had to pass.
Talk about
it.
Another player that he changed the game.
Yeah, he just got on there and dominated, straight up dominated. He said he could have done way more, but he didn't have the chance to do it. A 15-time All-Star, three-time All-Star Game MVP, eight-time NBA First Team, Rookie of the Year, the NBA 50th Anniversary Team, a gold medal in 1996. I mean, Shaq, we can say it over and over again, but the most dominant player ever. And the only question about his career is the free throw shooting, and what would happen?
The fact that the free throw shooting is named after Shaq tells you how much of an impact he actually made. And for me, free throw shooting is one thing, right? You foul this guy because it's the only way you can stop him.
Exactly.
You're not sending him to the line to shoot free throws. You're fouling him out of desperation. That's the difference between him and what's going on with DeAndre Jordan nowadays and Andre Drummond.
Yeah, Dwight Howard and those
guys.
You
aren't fouling Shaq to get him to the line. You're fouling him because you have nothing else you can do.
And
this
it's usually
gonna break
an end
your
one.
Wrist if you let him go through.
It's usually an end one. It's not like these guys are getting fouled and they're getting sent to the line to take the two free throws. Although Popovich is the one that brought that and made Shaq
and then
to
late
take
in the
those
fourth
free
corner,
throws.
You're guarding him with a small forward because he's the biggest guy left on your bench.
Exactly. And the other question I would ask is, what happens if Shaq would have stayed with Kobe for a couple of more years and didn't go to Miami and then Phoenix? And Kobe was only getting better.
Yeah.
So he would have carried the torch.
Kobe said,
you know, leaving LA was, there couldn't be two kings. And the younger king took over.
Yeah.
In Shaq's words. So that's the only thing that remains. But, four titles, three finals MVPs. I mean, Shaq has done it all. All-star, all-NBA-er. Most dominant player ever. He has over, 28,000 points on his career.
Something
He's
special.
There,
something
sixth
special
or seventh
too
all time.
About bringing championships to two cities. You know what I mean? To get that train started in Miami, have Wade begin his real legacy with him there in that franchise. And you look at what Miami did in the last few years. So he brought that culture of winning to a franchise that's so important to the NBA. Right after, Showtime version 2.
Yeah.
Kobe and Shaq.
And Pat Riley has said that Shaq was his biggest acquisition ever.
Yeah.
Not the big three. So that also speaks volume.
There is a few eyebrows, I think.
Yeah, although obviously, I know, Shaq was great.
The same.
Shaq was huge in 04 when they got him, but forming the big three with a LeBron, Chris Bosh, D-Wade, I think is a bigger...
Changing the entire NBA.
Yeah, I think that's a bigger achievement than
maybe
bringing in Shaq. But I think Pat Riley said that because he's mad that, when LeBron left and D-Wade left,
yeah,
and now he only has Bosh,
and
who's
who
arguably
know,
the weaker out of the three.
And with those health issues, I mean, I feel bad for Pat Riley. I shouldn't, because he's had so much success in his career, but
yeah, as
it's a raw deal.
Player back in the day, and then as a coach.
He'll see his name in that list one day, too. There's no question.
I think he's already in the list.
Ah, no surprise. Come on now. The guy's a legend.
Recapping the 2016 class, Players Shaquille O'Neal, Allen Iverson, Yao Ming, Cumberland Posey, Zelmo Beattie, and Cheryl Swoops. Coaches are Tom Izzo and John McLennan, and contributor Jerry Reinsdorf. He is the chairman and owner of the Bulls, and referee Daryl Gerritsen. And we'll be back on 3 in the Key with Jake Pavorski of Liberty Ballers to discuss the upcoming season for the Philadelphia 76ers. Stay with us.
I want to thank Biggie Smalls, Redman, Jadakiss, Tupac, and Michael Jackson for being my theme music throughout my career.
Welcome back to 3 in the Key.
Welcome back inside the Key. 3 in the Key, Elias Elzin alongside Dave Tripp. And we are now joined by Jake Pavorski of Liberty Ballers to discuss the upcoming season for the Sixers, a young team with lots of talent and assets, of course. The first overall pick this past summer, taking the Australian Ben Simmons. Lots of hype surrounding him for good reason. Obviously, showed his passing display at Summer League. Jake, thanks for taking the time and joining us.
No problem, guys. Thanks for having me on.
So, obviously, a young team. The Sixers, Ben Simmons, Joel Embiid, looks like he's 100% or close to it from the workout videos, those 15 Instagram or Vine videos that we've been able to watch of him working out. You got Embiid, you got Okafor, you got Noel, obviously a logjam up front. You got Simmons, Dario Saric coming from Europe and joining the team. You got a loaded backcourt as well. Now they brought in some veterans. What could we expect from the 76ers? Now, they were the laughing stock of the NBA for the past couple of seasons, but now it looks like maybe the process is over. Can you give us a feel of what to expect for Philly basketball now? Is it back?
I think you can expect the most fun 25 to 30 win team you've ever seen in your entire life. I think there's so much talent built on this team, and now that you finished up with the 2016 draft, and you have Ben Simmons, who you think, you know, could be your superstar guy going forward, and you also have Timothy Luwawu might be a nice piece, although he could spend some time in the D-League. And now you have the final, you know, debut of Joel Embiid, who could be one of the biggest franchise-changing players in the NBA. He has that potential to be a Hakeem Olajuwon-like player. And you mix in some veterans like Jared Bayless and Gerald Henderson, who know their roles, and you have Sergio Rodriguez, who can run the point. Dario Saric comes over from Turkey after having a giant summer in the Rio Olympics and in the FIBA qualifying tournament. There are a lot of pieces on this team that can intermingle very well, that can play different positions, a lot of 3-4 mixes. So I think you could see some very crazy lineups on the floor where maybe you have Simmons playing the point and Dario Saric the 4 with Embiid at the 5, or you could have Simmons at the 4 and Okafor at the 5 and Sergio Rodriguez at the point or Bayless at the point. So many of these guys can mesh well together that Brett Brown can try out some pretty crazy 5-player lineups and experiment a little bit. And I think you can catch some defenses off guard. They can go big, they can go small. They can shoot the ball well. So, I mean, it's going to take time for these guys to mesh. Obviously, there's a lot of rookies and a lot of guys who haven't played in the league yet. But once they get through those growing pains, I think you're going to see a really fun basketball season.
Yeah, definitely lots of reasons to be excited in Philly for the first time in a few years, for sure. I think Ben Simmons is a special player, and watching him in Summer League, he was just unbelievable. Now, Elias mentioned a bit of a logjam up front. You've got lots of talented big men. As you said, bringing Embiid in, he may have the highest potential of any of them. What do you think the Sixers do about that? Do you think that they make a move early in the season to try to clear some of that up and get the minutes spread out a little bit more evenly?
I think they will make a move at some point. I think if there was a good one on the table, this would have been done months ago. I mean, they're in a very complicated position. Obviously, you don't want to move Embiid, A, because you think he can be the franchise-changing player, but also because it's so hard for a team to give up, you know, good value for a guy who hasn't played in 2 years with very serious.
You'd never want to sell low on a guy like Embiid, for sure.
Definitely not. I mean, well, the issue is they're going to sell low no matter what. They're either going to sell low on Nerland, who's got 1 year left, who was sort of, you know, had some, maybe some, not the best team guy in the world. I think he's got a reputation for that around the league. And then you have Jahlil Okafor, who, yeah, he put up a lot of points, but also I think teams realize that he's such a hard piece to fit around in today's NBA, where if you can't shoot the three or you're not really good in the pick and roll and you don't rebound or defend the rim that well, it's sort of hard to find a role for a guy like that. He's sort of built out of that, like, Al Jefferson-type mold where he'll, like, back you down forever and then try and score. And it's just so hard when this league is built on, like, pace and space. He's just a guy that doesn't fit into that. So I think, yes, they're going to have to make a move. They've been trying to make a move for a while, but I think it's more likely they move Nerlens and Jahlil, mostly because they have Jahlil under team control for a long, couple more years, while Nerlens is going to need an extension coming up. And I think they're ready to move on for him, and they want to see if they can get anything out of Jahlil after a pretty decent rookie season.
And you mentioned that you think Noel will be the one moved. Obviously, Boston has been the team that's always been coming up. They have the most assets and players and picks. Do you see him going to the Celtics, or do you think it's a random team out in the Western Conference or another team in the East that makes it a move for Noel? Obviously, a proven, maybe not so proven in the NBA, but we know what he can give on the defensive end. Obviously, still building his offensive game. Do you see it going to Boston, or do you think it's anyone that puts in the best offer that the Sixers might, fold and be like, okay, this is good enough for us, here you go?
I mean, they'll listen to any team right now, but I think Boston is the one that's probably been the most interested, if not the only team interested right now. And obviously, Nerlens is from the Boston area, tweeted over the summer how much he loves Boston, and I think he'd be a good fit there. If they want to play Al Horford at the four, all of a sudden you have your rim-protecting five there, Nerlens. It's just what is, Boston want to give them value. I would love to get a guy like Avery Bradley or Jake Crowder. Obviously, that's a core piece of the Boston team. They're not going to give him up. They have a couple first-round picks. They still have the Brooklyn pick. But again, that's not something they're going to want to give up. They're going to want to give up a late first. And maybe you can pry Terry Rozier out of them, or they would want to give up R.J. Hunter or something. It's tough to find a fit trade-wise for these teams. I mean, Nerlens makes sense from a player standpoint. But for what Philadelphia wants to get in return, if there's something really there, and I think Danny Ainge does a good job of holding out and getting what he wants. And I think eventually Brian Colangelo is just going to have to cave and say, all right, give me whatever you have. If it's a first-rounder and an R.J. Hunter, so be it. But, yeah, I think Boston is probably the most likely and only scenario right now to get a deal done.
So a lot of the attention has obviously been in the offseason on Ben Simmons. He had an incredible summer league where every minute you watched, you didn't want to look away. He was so skilled, feeding the passes. I mentioned it earlier, lots of optimism, but what do you think about Dario Saric? This is a guy that played in the Olympics, obviously made a real impact. Is there a lot of excitement about him coming to town in Philadelphia?
There is. I think people were concerned for a while that he wasn't going to be here until next year, maybe not come at all, and obviously you have the salary cap implications of him waiting next year like Nikola Mirotic did. He's a team guy through and through. He told Brett Brown and Sam Hinkie 2 years ago he was going to come over in 2 years. Fortunately, Sam couldn't be here to see him sign, but he's a man of his word. He seems like a team guy. I've heard good things about him personality-wise, and he's a real player. I think that he's not going to be a superstar, obviously. His ceiling feels like a six-man to me, but you can bring him off the bench, and he could run the point for you, sort of like a way Simmons does with the second unit. He's really improved his shooting over the past couple years in Turkey. He's improved every year. He shot 50-40-90 in EuroLeague this year, which is very impressive.
Oh, yeah.
He's an absolute gamer on both ends of the floor. I think he's going to come in and be a solid contributor. Obviously, you got to adjust to the space of the NBA game and sort of the pace of how it works too. And that'll also take some time. And you can see where, in the Olympics where he can struggle a little bit with his outside shooting and stuff like that. But I think he's going to come and he's going to be a solid producer, maybe shoot 33-34% from three during his first season. And he's going to move the ball around. He's going to play some tough defense. And he's a really solid blue guy for this team. So I'm very excited to watch him play. I think he'll be a very underrated guy for this team for a couple of years going forward.
I think it's a solid addition, especially him coming now at the right time. Not a lot of attention is going to be on him. Obviously, Embiid, who's been out for 2 years, they're going to want to pay more attention to him. What can he do? Ben Simmons, obviously, everyone has him pegged as the rookie of the year. I think Dario Saric can be like a Tony Kukoc type of player, maybe Tony Kukoc 2.0, better, maybe a better shooter, but he's still versatile, can pass the ball, get up and down the floor. Up here, Jake, in Canada, we like to take a look at our Canadian players who have been flooding the NBA in the past couple of years. Obviously, Nick Stauskas has been, he plays for the Sixers. What can you say about Stauskas' game? Obviously, he's bounced around in his first couple of seasons, hasn't had really the best impact, but he played well at Michigan when he was there. He's played, given us a few minutes and good games for Team Canada nationally. But what can you expect from Stauskas this upcoming season? And obviously, you've seen him play and going forward in his NBA season, his NBA career.
I think this is the most important preseason Nick Stauskas has ever had in his life. This was a really, really important summer for him to sort of solidify his spot on the roster. And the Sixers brought him in to play Summer League for a couple games, and he did not look good. He was airballing some threes, getting lost on defense. to say that he looked that bad in summer league is very concerning. And, you know, as you mentioned, coming out of Michigan, great shooter, you know, played really well, could even handle the ball a little bit. If he was there on the board at 10 when the Sixers picked 2 years ago, they would have taken him instead of trading back and getting Elfrid Payton and then flipping that for Dario Saric. There's no doubt in my mind. He came to Philadelphia and sort of, you know, the salary dump for Carl Landry, where they got all that stuff. And Gauss was kind of an afterthought, and I was excited, you know, at the prospect of sort of, you know, molding him into a nice 3-and-D guy and then him being a contributor because the Kings sold so low. And you watch him last year, and it's just it's really just disappointing to see how poor his NBA game is these days. He's got zero confidence in his shot. It's all a mental thing, and it's really unfortunate because he was so good at that in Michigan. And I don't know, you know, how he can get better. He can continue to get all these shots up, and he had a ton of open looks last year, and none of them fall. So if he can't shoot the three, then, I mean, he's not a good defender, and he's not the greatest athlete in the world that he can just get by on that. So there's a very good chance that he just doesn't make this team. You have Jared Bayless, the two guard. You have Gerald Henderson as well. Well, also Robert Covington, Hollis Thompson, the Wawu fighting for minutes. I mean, where's the room for Nick Stauskas on this roster? I'm just not sure.
That's a fair point. You've got a brand new general manager, maybe not brand new, but he's getting his first real stamp on the franchise, Brian Colangelo. With Toronto, at one point in his career, he drafted a lot of the team that we get to watch just about every night during the regular season. DeMar DeRozan, Jonas Valanciunas. Like, this is a general manager that we're very familiar with up here. Are you guys optimistic about his reign as general manager now that Henke's out of town and it looks like you guys are starting to build towards something legitimate?
As a Henkeite and a trust the process kind of guy, I was a little disappointed to see the way Sam went out. And then obviously when you have Jerry Colangelo involved and him bringing in Brian, that whole thing was just, it tasted like sour milk, really. I just hated the way it went down. And I thought what Brian was going to do is he wanted to show the owners that he could spend, he could bring in guys, and I thought he was going to go out and throw crazy contracts at, like, Harrison Barnes and the DeMar DeRozans of the world, and I was really impressed with the way he handled this offseason. He found guys that can be solid contributors that will help his team get through to the next phase of competing for an NBA championship without using a ton of salary cap. I thought Jared Bayless and Gerald Henderson were excellent signings, and in the draft, he was perfect. Obviously, you can't overthink the Simmons pick, but he sat at 24 and 26, I assumed that he was going to trade up and try and get maybe Malachi Richardson or someone from Syracuse. And he sat at 24 and 26, didn't give up too much. And you heard the news about the possible Chris Dunn trade or whatever with them giving up Robert Covington at 24 and 26 and whatever else, basically giving him all this stuff. And he sat tight at 24 and 26, drafted two really solid players in Furkan Korkmaz and Timothy Luwawu. And everything he's done this offseason, other than maybe the signing of Elton Brand, which is kind of pointless, I've really approved of. I've just been stunned at how much poise he sort of handled himself with this offseason. And Sam Hinkie always had this long view. He's always had the longest view in the room where to see how long this team can compete for. And Brian Colangelo has kept the timeline that Sam Hinkie created, where this team can still be competitive 5-10 years without, you know, sacrificing some short-term success.
Come on, Elton Brand wasn't that poignant. That's a good vet, right?
I mean, I guess.
Just kidding. Jake, before we let you go here, you mentioned at the top that this is going to be the most exciting 25-30 win team. I agree with that. Obviously, all the young talent. But if you wanted to put averages to Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid, what would you think that their numbers would be like?
I'm going to say like 13-8 boards and like 7 assists a game for Simmons. Like, he's not going to score a ton. He'll get to the line. That's how he's going to do a lot of his scoring. But he's going to grab some boards. Obviously, I think he's going to play a lot of point forward, so he's going to be dishing out assists. I mean, his court vision is absolutely unbelievable. Yeah. I've never seen anything like it before. So he's going to rack a lot of assists. And we'll see what happens with Embiid. I think he plays, I don't know, 20 minutes a game, something around that, and he doesn't play back-to-back, stuff like that. Obviously, you want to make sure that he can play, obviously, but you want to be cautious about how much stress you're really putting on that foot. I think he puts up something in that same sort of ballpark, like 13-7, 14-7, something like that. So he'll still show that he can play, but it's just he won't really have the playing time to put up those gaudy numbers.
Let me tell you, for the first time in a couple of years, I'm excited to watch some Philadelphia 76ers basketball,
I'm
man.
Me too.
PVR in that one for sure.
You guys in Philly must be very, very happy that the team is finally what you guys expected with all these tanking years. But I could agree with you, though, earlier how you mentioned that Sam Hinkie got, like, well, he kind of left, but the whole thing with him and his long vision probably coming to fruition right now without him at the helm. But we thank you, Jake Pavorsky of Liberty Ballers, for joining us on 3 in the Key, and we'd love to chat with you sometime during the upcoming season. Thanks again.
Absolutely, guys. Trust the process. Feel his
fate. Stevenson trying to poke it away from James, and they're going to call a loose ball foul against James, and that's his fifth personal foul.
And I'll say that play by Lance Stevenson right there, forget the foul call on James. The ball pressure and then the effort to pursue, that's how you get back into a game.
Welcome back to 3 in the Key.
Back inside the Key 3, Nikki Elias Alzina alongside Dave Fripp.
Is there?
Lots going on around the NBA, obviously, as we approach training camp.
Listen, tons.
Yeah. Shumpert just got arrested on a DUI.
He's had a busy week.
Yeah, he was in a music video.
Fade.
By Kanye West. I like that song off the Life of Pablo album, Kanye West.
Yes, sir.
Good track featuring Post Malone.
Hey, no question. The video
was a little bit weird.
He got up in there. Shumpert.
Yeah, he was there end there for a bit naked, I believe.
Yeah, he gets naked. He gets naked in that video.
Is that his girlfriend, wife? I don't know. I don't know.
It might even
together.
Be their child at the end of it. Yeah, I didn't do all the research, but that was. Something.
I think. Well, he did deliver the baby, right? Remember that he delivered the baby. She couldn't.
That's
get
right.
To the hospital.
Yeah.
He delivered it in the washroom, or something.
He
like
gets
that.
Full marks on that one. The DUI, I'm not so impressed with.
No, but yeah, a little bit of a weird video.
His mugshot's pretty funny. You see this?
She's cool. It's not cool. You can check out his mugshot. You can be able to find that.
They got sure that on TMZ.
Pretty sure you guys have already seen
and, you
it.
Know,
but
everywhere.
His girlfriend or wife, she did a good job in the video.
Yeah, she's pretty cute. She's pretty cute.
DUI for him. Moving on to a player who actually signed with a team, Lance Stevenson. What do you think about this, him joining the New Orleans Pelicans? We talked about this team last week because Drew Holiday is going to be away from the team for the first part. Obviously,
yeah, it's a sad story.
Yeah,
for sure.
Sad story. His wife having brain surgery.
Yeah, she had brain surgery. She's
tumor.
Got a benign tumor in her brain.
Yeah.
It's very serious.
It
is
serious.
Anytime you're going
and she's
in
pregnant.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. You definitely feel for Drew Holiday in this situation. And the Pelicans, I mean, they got to deal with it.
And Tyreek Evans is also going to be out for the little bit. So
he's
going to
be missing at least training camp.
They brought in Lance Stevenson, a ball handler who had really his last year in Indiana was great.
Yeah.
Led him to signing that contract with Charlotte. Didn't work out in Charlotte. They traded him to the Clippers. Didn't work out with the Clippers.
He's been all over the league.
He went to Memphis.
He had some good time in Memphis, though.
He had some good time, but I think it's because they were banged up and they had a lot of guys who were trying to prove themselves.
Similar to New Orleans, for sure. He'll fit that Tyreek Evans role.
Yeah, they brought in, he's a ball handler, and now it's going to be interesting to see what he does. Is he going to try to be the Lance Stevenson of, oh, let me take this, let me do that, or is he going to be the Lance Stevenson that we saw in his last year in Indiana, really defend well, and then get out, rebound, and set players up? You got a guy and an all-star.
I loved him in
and
Indiana.
An all-NBA. Or
I love that series against Anthony the Davis. Heat.
Yeah,
you know, like I really like what we know he can do. It's just, is he going to be that Lance Stevenson, or... the guy who's, you know, trouble in the locker room, in the news for the wrong reasons. I still like it. I mean, you look at what there's left on the free agent wire. I mean, Lance Stevenson's the best fit out of any player there. I think it's the best fit for the Pelicans and what they need. Particularly, I mean, who's going to be their starting point guard next year? Somebody's got to get the ball to Buddy Hield. I think that Lance Stevenson can do that.
And to Anthony Davis.
Definitely.
And exactly. And we'll see. How he does in New Orleans. I don't know. I think it's another move that's a low risk, high reward type
Absolutely.
Of thing. If he comes in and he plays very well and then they bring Drew Holiday comes back and Tyreek Evans comes back and there's no real change in his game and he's not going to be demanded a lot when these guys come back. But at the beginning, I think he will be. I think Alvin Gentry is going to try to ask. He's going to be a veteran guy on that team.
Yeah.
After
they didn't bring in a lot of other great players.
Exactly. They lost Eric Gordon. They lost Ryan Anderson to free agency.
Both to the Rockets.
Exactly.
Package deal.
I think Eric Gordon was a guy that was, you know, you could have saw leave. I thought maybe they would have made more of a run for Ryan Anderson, but I don't think they wanted to pay him in the $20 million range, obviously. But
they,
yeah,
also didn't know what the injury situation would be going into this season. So
yeah, and well,
hindsight's 20/20, and you, Lance Stephenson's a good fit at this time of year.
We'll see how it goes. I'm interested to see that move, and hopefully he can bounce back in his career and do well here with New Orleans, and we'll see what he does moving forward. Josh Richardson, a young guy who had a good postseason with Miami and down the stretch last year, you know, arguably could have been the better out of the two rookies that they had on that team, him and Justice Winslow down the stretch, who was playing better.
I agree completely.
Josh Richardson was phenomenal, to say that, not phenomenal, but you know what I mean. Like, he played very well.
For a first-year player, he looked
like
really
exactly
smart,
and like not like season. He wasn't a rookie. He got hurt. He's out 6 to 8 weeks. I believe it's a partial tear in his MCL.
Yeah,
or
knee injury and workouts on Friday.
So 6 to 8 weeks, he should be back by the beginning of the season, maybe second week of the season, depending how the Heat take it. If they take it slow, that's going to hurt a little bit, especially with D-Wade gone. This is a guy they probably would have expected a little more out of.
You know they're happy they retained
the
Johnson now,
exactly,
though, because now they've got somebody to fit that role. But, yeah, that's a tough loss for them because they...
It could have been worse.
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
knees,
without question.
When we're talking about knees, that could be... Not, it could go from 6 to 8 weeks. It can go down to, you know, 12 to, you know, 16, 18, 20, a couple of months.
Look
out
at Will
the
Macklin.
Whole season.
Look at Will Macklin.
Look at Will Macklin. That guy was hurt for a while.
He's still recovering. He's still recovering.
And last little story we want to talk about this week. Isaiah Thomas, have you heard this one? Have you seen this? Where he stopped by, saw a little kid, a 14-year-old kid, I believe, by the name of Robbie McNulty, who was shooting hoops alone.
I love this
at
story.
A court, and I think it's Cambridge in Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And Isaiah Thomas was in the neighborhood, saw him shooting, and he just got pulled up on the kid, and he's like, "Hey, can I take some shots?" And they played basketball together for a little while, and the kid turned out the kid, his favorite player is Isaiah Thomas. So what a treat, eh? He's just playing basketball one day, and your favorite player shows up to take some shots with you.
Yeah, it's a dream come true. You see this sort of thing in hockey a lot. We're in Canada. You see a lot of players, P.K. Subban playing with kids in Montreal, Sidney Crosby playing with kids in Cole Harbour. It's just a neat thing. And to see Isaiah Thomas going into outside of his neighborhood and playing with this kid in Cambridge is just neat. I mean, imagine you were that kid. You'd be falling out of your chair. Imagine Kobe came and played with you.
That would be amazing.
Point growing up. I mean, it's a dream come true. And that's, I think that Isaiah Thomas is...
He's that type
really
of guy. He looks like a nice, genuine person.
He's had to earn everything he's ever got.
Exactly, because he's a short player. Those guys, you see more with them. And he says that he's cut from the same cloth as AI. And he gives it. It was a first-time All-Star last year. We're talking about a guy who was the last pick in the 2011 draft. He was chosen 60th overall. And now to become an All-Star, to be playing well in Boston to in the postseason, and now they get Al Horford. And they made a few additions. Will they be trading that pick? Will they want to go out and maybe snatch someone
superstar.
Else?
There's lots of guys that could potentially move.
And add to the
about
roster.
This all summer.
Exactly. Boston is a team to watch. And, you know, that's great coaching. Again, just great story of Isaiah Thomas showing up. It was in the neighborhood, saw the little kid shooting, joins him, takes a few, you know, plays a little bit of basketball with him. That's the type of things you want to see from these guys
who are
idols and role models to these young players, that they showed up. And
there's a lot
of
good character on that Boston team. I think that they could be a definite team to watch this year. Obviously, I mean, everybody's talking about Boston getting Al Horford and stuff, but like the character, the defense, like the willingness to play defense, the fact that there isn't really a superstar on that team. I think that Boston's going to be a team to watch.
Yeah, man, and it was great, and that wraps it up for us this
finally,
week.
One last note. Number one recruit
of
this year's high school class, DeAndre Ayton, just committed to the Arizona Wildcats and Sean Miller, the highest recruit in the school's history, ahead of Aaron Gordon, who was the fourth. Stanley Johnson was number four as well. A lot of good recruits going to Arizona. They've never had the number one guy. And Sean Miller's program is going to be pretty spooky in a couple of years for sure. He always recruits the top five class. And this guy is already being predicted as the number one draft pick a couple years from now in the NBA. So,
and that is solid.
7 feet tall, 240 pounds, monstrous. It's going to be good.
And he's going down to Arizona. That wraps it up for
us
this week.
That wraps it up.
Yeah. For Dave Tripp, I'm Elias Elzane. 3Nikki, remember you can get a hold of us at the3Nikki@gmail.com, on Facebook at 3Nikki, follow on Twitter at BasketPod, on Instagram at the3Nikki, and you can listen to each and every episode on iTunes, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher Radio. Make sure to rate and review us on iTunes.
We miss you, Will.
And that does it for us. Peace.
I'm supposed to be the franchise player, and we're in here talking about practice. I mean, listen, we're talking about practice. Not a game, not a game, not a game. We're talking about practice.